Hi, everyone. Tom Salemi here. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. This is brought to you by Device Talks Boston. Please join us on May 27th and 28th at Device Talks Boston. Please also join us at Device Talks Minnesota on May 4th. Can't wait to see you at one or both locations. Would love to see you twice, but once is almost as nice. Get some great events, great agendas, great speakers coming your way. Go to boston.devicetalks.com for more information about that event. And minnesota.devicetalks.com for information about that event. In this episode today, we've got a really great conversation I had with Darren Uecker. He's the Chief Technology Officer of Pulse Biosciences, which is a fascinating company that was formed basically to find a useful and, of course, a productive application for its pulse field technology. And Darren, we'll get into that story a bit, but his story is quite compelling as well. He is got a great med tech background, starting at the very start with computer motion, which of course is now part of Intuitive's story. So I'll talk with Darren about his path in med tech. He's been with many companies; most, if not all, have gone on to be acquired. So he's had a successful run in this industry, and Pulse Biosciences looks like the next big win. Before that, you'll get to visit with Ralph Kern. He's the Chief Medical Officer at Cognito Therapeutics. We talked with him at Device Talks West. Cognito is just a fascinating neuro business, and I know you'll enjoy that conversation with Ralph. And of course, we'll kick everything off with my conversation with Chris Newmarker. We'll hit the highlights of this week, and we'll, of course, talk a little bit of nonsense, but that's to be expected. And I hope you enjoy it just a little bit. All right, folks. Once again, I hope you join us at Device Talks Minnesota and Device Talks Boston. Now, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Sir,
doing well, Tom. Doing well. So, looks like weather's warming up here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah,
looks like we're gonna get rid of our ice in more ways than one. So,
I've been reading those headlines and hopeful that there's truth behind that for sure.
I will believe it when I see it. But yes, hopefully, it's been a tough time, and yeah, I'm proud of these cities. Proud of what we've done.
Yeah, you very much should be. As I wrote in MDO this week, you know, trying to pinpoint MedTech's hometown. If home is where the heart is, and that place is Minnesota. Everyone's been very courageous there and very impressive. And I know we have our little fun Boston Minnesota rivalry banter, but hats off to you folks. So, but no, hopefully you'll see some calming down of what's gone on over there.
Exactly. So
great news for Minnesota, and, yeah, and we're all rooting for you.
Thanks. Yeah, all getting better. So, well, here we are, and you know, there's actually like some more like really. I mean, medtech industry just keeps on buzzing. So much going on.
Absolutely. No, interesting. You've got an interesting set of newsmakers this week, and of course, we'll be in Minnesota on May 4th at Device 4th. Talks Minnesota. So. The Star
awesome.
Wars Day, as folks have pointed out, May the 4th.
May the 4th be with you,
yep.
Tom.
So, I don't know if you've ever seen Star Wars, Chris, but it's pretty good.
I've heard it's good. I should check that out sometime.
All right, let us roll into the Newmarker's newsmakers. Chris, what is number 5?
Hey, number 5 on the list. We've got Karl Storz and Smith and Nephew announcing a partnership around a surgical visualization. And just as a fun aside, Karl Storz is also the owner of Asensa Surgical, which, mm-hmm. you know, has done a lot of pioneering with surgical robotics and, you know, innovating. So, but yeah, this is like this SNN and Karl Storz partnerships about supporting ORs and ambulatory surgery centers. Yeah, visualization. I mean, this kind of digitization of surgery we've seen over the past decade or two. Yeah, just sounds like a cool partnership.
Absolutely. No, and it definitely is, again, another indication of Smith and Nephew's focus on the ASC. I think they started their own surgical network last year, right?
Yeah.
They started an ambulatory surgical network last year. So the orthopedic industry is getting higher and higher tech, as Yvonne Tordo said at Device Talks Boston. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that was, and you're right, like Smith and Nephew, actually they've been working on streamlining their inventory and whatnot for years. So that's also very cool. But yeah, I mean, this isn't your old, like, oh, here's a knee replacement, here's a hip replacement, things are getting like really high tech. You're seeing a lot of sensors, a lot of digitization, you know, a lot of really neat planning tools around operations to hopefully, I mean, they seem to like be doing a really good job like reducing like errors and giving people better results. So, I mean, yeah, it's exciting. As someone like you who's getting older, you know, and the joints are getting a little more creaky, it's nice to know that, you know, someone jump like up me. And down, you know, that there might be a little bit of a ache in one of those knees there. It's like, well, I'm glad they're getting better at how they're doing all that stuff, you know.
Someone's got a milestone birthday this year, don't they, Christina?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're not that far behind in this race to the bottom. So, all right, Chris Newmarker, what is number four?
All right, number four on the list, we've got NextSense debuting brain activity sensing headphones that can improve sleep. These things are called the Smart Buds. By the way, the previous article is by senior editor Sean Hooley. This one is by associate editor Skylar Rivera. I mean, this is just like really interesting tech. I mean, uses 6 EEG sensors to measure electrical activity and detect when users are in light sleep, deep sleep, or drifting away. As the user falls deeper into sleep, this is just so basically they're delivering precisely timed sound frequencies called soft pink noise that nudge the brain's waves into a restorative rhythm, strengthening deep sleep. So these are smart buds that help you sleep better.
I'm a gray noise guy. Are you a noise person? Do you have white noise machines or anything going on while you're sleeping?
You know, I might play something a little mellow, Celtic, new agey, whatever, you know, like lightly for a bit while I'm drifting off.
No, while you're sleeping. You don't have that stuff going on all night? Must have nightmares. Good God.
No, yeah.
My wife has the fan going on her nightstand, but I've got the iPad with some noise. And this is interesting because one of my kids sleeps with his earbuds in because I think he uses white noise. So this is definitely a way to go about it. It's fascinating that it kind of measures whether or not the quality of your sleep and whether you need the noise or not.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like is the noise helping or not helping or.
It definitely, if I'm in a hotel, like if I'm traveling, I bring my iPad, I blare the gray noise and it just kind of level sets
gets
me.
You going.
Just gets me to sleep and keeps you asleep too, which is always the trouble with the hotel. Like you wake up like at 12:30 in the morning and you're like, oh, it must be time to get up. And then you look at the clock, you're like, oh God, like I've got another 5 hours of this. So the gray noise really helps me. But this is interesting, having earbuds in, which I don't usually do. And I'm not sure how I feel about sleeping with those in.
But, yeah, that would be a little interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that it kind of comes and goes as you need it, that's a really, really interesting approach. And I'm not sure if that's, they must have some data suggesting that helps, because I would think just a steady level of noise would be more steadying and smoothing. But perhaps this counter balance.
I think it's wild that it uses EEG sensors to sense how you're sleeping. And so
right, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's very sophisticated. And by the way, this company is based in Mountain View, California, so like right in the heart of Silicon Valley. But
all right,
yeah, it's exciting tech.
Well, sleep, I have a feeling over the next decade or so, sleep's already seen as important, but I think someday we're going to look back and realize we've undervalued the importance of sleep.
Oh, absolutely.
To health, to cognitive health to dementia and things like that. And they're already pointing to sleep as sort of a pre-indicator of Alzheimer's or lack of sleep. So I think this is actually, I mean, we can say it's a lifestyle product, but I believe it, someday these are going to be healthcare
health
products.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, my day is so much better when I get a good night's sleep. I mean, it's just like kicks it up a notch. So
I did not get a good night's sleep last night, but that's on me. I was playing Civilization VI, and I just didn't want to go to bed. I was a bad boy, Chris Neumarker. If I were my own dad, I would have yelled at me myself a couple hours before I actually went to bed. So, but that's on me. But part of it is also this stupid cough, like that just won't work. It's making me very grumbly. So anyway, it's nice to have an escape Civ 6, and it's nice to have these noise machines. So let's see where this goes.
We just have little kids over here, so we're still dealing with the little kids crawling into the bed sometime. That's just like nothing like waking up and having a kid's foot in your face or something. Yeah, but oh well. It'll get better. Everything gets better.
That goes away.
Yes, exactly.
You hope, anyway.
All right. It better go away. I mean, right?
What's number three, Chris Neumarker?
Oh my gosh, number three on the list. This is from yours truly. I noticed a note from Mike Mattson and his colleagues over at Needham Company that they were upgrading Medtronic shares to buy. That got my attention. I mean, you know, because Mattson was talking about all the products that Medtronic has in its pipeline that could give it a boost.
Well, that's great news for Medtronic for sure. I mean, when I saw the headline and I started listing in my head what's going on, I thought about Hugo, but they're right. I mean, there's a lot of other the Symplicity news with Medicare, Affair is great news. So Medtronic's been on a bit of a roll. So
this Alta Viva device, I mean, there's a lot of potential in that. I mean, especially because, I mean, stuff that's been out there before has been, more like pacemaker-like devices. And this is like, you know, some tiny thing you put under the skin, you know, near the ankle, like to provide tibial nerve stimulation, and you know it treats urinary incontinence. If someday I unfortunately had something like that, I mean, yeah, like something like that they just implant near my ankle sounds pretty great.
Great. All right, Chris Neumarker, let's move on to number two.
Yeah, number two on the list. This is from Sean, and it's Johnson & Johnson reporting some encouraging results around their investigational Omnipulse platform for AFib, and they also had some more data to back their VARIPULSE system. So some more. This pulse field ablation space is just so dynamic right now. Just so exciting and offering so much potential. And so it's neat to see, J&J moving forward with some more positive, data on this, investigational system.
Absolutely. Our keynote guest on the podcast today will be Darren Uecker, who's the Chief Technology Officer at Pulse Biosciences. And they had some great news last week at the AF Symposium here in Boston. There's a smaller trial. I think it was like 150 people, but there's success rate for treatment was like 96% after 3 months. And then I think it was still close to 90 after a longer period of time. And Darren will share it in the interview. But we talked a bit about, how this field could shape up and basically how all these different programs can find a successful path. So it's great to have all these options for interventionalists and of course for patients.
Yeah, and I love competition. I think the more competition you have, the more innovation that you're going to see. So,
yeah, we actually had a great conversation. He was with Computer Motion at the start. He was Chief Technology Officer there, and he talked about how they came to be acquired by Intuitive.
Wow.
It was basically a realization that, to your point, competition is great, but they were also like, look, we can keep beating ourselves, each other up, or we can join forces and try to really make an effective change for healthcare. So. That's the path they went. All right. What's the big number one, Chris Neumarker?
Hey, number one on the list. This is also from Sean, and this is news from Stryker announcing through an SEC filing that, these probes that they have for anti-bribery, potential anti-bribery law violations have now been dropped. So a lot of medtech companies do a lot of business overseas, and they were facing some kind of investigation of some kind of like investigation whether potentially some kind of Foreign Corrupt Practices Act violations occurred. But they're through it. They no charges. Things have been dropped. So that's those government bodies have ended their investigations. It was the Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission. So good news for Stryker.
Yeah, good news for Stryker. Good news for the industry. All right. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great top five, Chris Newmarker. Where can folks get the top five newsmakers every single day? How can they do
that? Oh my gosh. You can get the top five newsmakers by just following our daily Plus 5 e-newsletter over at Mass Device. Super easy just to go to the site and, right there at the top, we got a box to get subscribed for the newsletter. So go over to massdevice.com and you can get that daily dose of newsmakers. But of course, always, stop by here and listen to me and Tom chat about the news.
It's a great newsletter, but it's not as entertaining as you and I are. I mean, we are just charming as all heck, aren't we?
Totally. Yeah. just the charisma. I mean, I'm sorry I have to deal with all this charisma.
Just too much charisma.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Chris Newmarker, thanks so much
makes
for the great
JFK news look like a boring person. I mean, that's like,
all right. Thank you, Chris Newmarker. Now it's time for our Future of MedTech Opportunities interview, our FOMO interview. This one is led by Jim Hammerand. He's the managing editor of Medical Design and Outsourcing, and he spoke with Ralph Kern, chief medical officer at Cognito Therapeutics. They connected at Device Talks West. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm Jim Hammerand, Managing Editor of Medical Design Outsourcing, and we are here live at Device Talks West doing some FOMO interviews for the podcast. I'm here today with Cognito Therapeutics Chief Medical and Scientific Officer, Dr. Ralph Kern. Ralph, thank you. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
So first of all, let's talk about what drew you into neurotech and Neuromod specifically.
Yeah, my background's in neurology and neuroscience, and electricity is the language of the brain. And I spent first part of my career being very much involved in measuring and stimulating nerves. And it occurred to me that this was a portal that could afford a treatment modality. And Cognito is really at that intersection of using the language of the brain to bring a treatment to people that are in desperate need of a healthcare solution. And that was really the crux of it for me.
And how exactly does this technology work?
Our brain uses electricity to maintain its resilience. And the resilience is driven by well-known biology. So we're harnessing the brain's own ability to heal itself and maintain a resilient state. We do that by delivering synchronized light and sound that produce a synchronized electrical activity to drive that same biology. And that's essentially, in simple terms, what we do. So basically, the technology is simple, but incredibly impactful because of the native biology that it's able to drive.
What, from your perspective, are the biggest of the principal challenges right now facing the neurotech and neuromod market?
Yeah, I think increasing awareness of the capability of neurotechnology, I think understanding, particularly for brain disease, that the blood-brain barrier is there to keep most things out. We have privileged access to the brain by using the sensory on-ramps. So the synchronized light and sound activates the brain directly without impediment to drive the electrical activity that's important for this biological expression. So we're not limited by the constraints of drugs. So I think that that awareness is becoming greater and greater, particularly with the brain-computer interface, transcutaneous magnetic stimulation, various forms of electrical stimulation, and also the idea that you can activate the brain and change the way the brain functions. So I think that I think some of the wins are paving the way for us, but I think there's much more work to be done to make people aware that neurotechnology can achieve some outcomes that are not possible with drugs. Mm-hmm. And they really are complementary, but there's unique attributes of neurotechnology that create huge opportunities to solve difficult problems.
What about some of the remaining work to be done on the clinical side and the technical side? What are the big challenges?
Yeah, I think the big challenge for neurotechnology, and we're trying to be on the leading edge of that, is that the evidentiary requirements for regulatory approval and payer access can be very different. We are developing our technology with a very robust clinical program, which is very data rich, that will try to bridge that gap so that we have a very high level of robust data for regulatory support, but at the same time will translate to payers who want to see very meaningful outcomes. And I think that's the approach we've taken. We're in our fifth clinical trial right now. Mm-hmm. We have a fully enrolled pivotal trial in mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease in the U.S. at 60 sites. And we're taking a very rigorous approach. That study will read out later next summer. And at that point, we'll be moving very quickly to a regulatory submission and try to get this into the hands of people who need it as quickly as possible.
What are some of the big changes happening right now in the neuromod market, even beyond your company?
Yeah, I think neurologists, neurosurgeons, and those who are trying to find solutions for brain disease are increasingly interested in neurotechnology options. I think some of the initial wins with deep brain stimulation have fostered that interest. Yeah. Really remarkable outcomes. I think we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. We hope to continue that with our technology, and we look to other technologies as brothers in arms to help us move the field forward. I think one of the big challenges, of course, will be access and coverage. I think health systems will have to play a big part in bringing these solutions to patients. The way we look at it is that we want to be patient-friendly, we want to be provider-friendly, we want to be health system-friendly, and we want to be payer-friendly. So we want to provide a solution that really is a win-win across the spectrum, so there isn't this divide between health medical practice and health systems. We want to bring those two together.
And with regards to your particular market, you know, neurotech and neuromod more broadly, paint us a picture of the future. What does this market look like 5-10 years into the future?
Yeah, I think it's going to move from treating very difficult diseases to looking at recovery from injury, and then looking at human performance. I think that is the spectrum that we're looking at. Obviously, starting with a diseased approach, we're looking at, you know, slowing the rate of progression of diseases, or hopefully in some cases, stabilizing or improving function. Mm-hmm. I think the second phase will be looking at things like stroke and traumatic brain injury to look at speeding up and extending the degree of recovery in those individuals. But there's a very short line to, could human performance be improved? And there's many examples of that in the military and non-military use, Formula F1 drivers, competitive sports. I think that the sky is the limit. And I think the lessons we're learning now about building brain resilience will translate across diseases and non-disease areas as well.
I'm always interested in your perspective on what are the technologies that we need to get us there?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that it may not be considered a technology per se, but I think the idea of introducing a disruptive technology and collecting data from patient use real time in the home and integrating that in a platform is going to be incredibly valuable. In our case, we want to create a platform where the device is customized to the individual. So in our case, we confirm brain activity with our device at the start, and we optimize it. We optimize the settings for that. We monitor device adherence real time using the cloud. We provide adherence reports to the treating physician so they know how the person's using the device real time. We want to integrate that with the diagnostic step up front so we can treat people earlier. We also want to integrate it with a monitoring aspect where we monitor the person in their home and we get a sense of whether they're doing better, you know, or not.
Yeah.
And I think that bringing all of those things together in a data-rich environment will require technology. It'll require different types of analytical techniques to integrate all that data. It will require a different commercial model. Mm-hmm. And it'll require a lot of activity at integrated delivery networks. So the pattern of care in the future will be integrating new technologies, mm-hmm. not at the individual patient level only, but at the health system level. So we change care pathways, we monitor performance, and we provide real-time evidence of impact. I think that's the future.
Well, the future is bright. I'm very excited to see what you and your team are working on and to follow you in the months and years ahead. Thank you so much for not just your time here today, but all the work that you do to advance patient care. Really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, once again, it was great to hear from Ralph Kern of Cognito. Now it's time for our keynote conversation. Again, my guest is Darren Uecker. He's the Chief Technology Officer at Pulse Biosciences. We'll talk a lot of medtech. We'll talk about his start at Computer Motion, sort of what went into the decision to combine Computer Motion with Intuitive. And he's been with a lot of companies that I know you've heard of because I've heard of them. He's been Chief Technology Officer. He's been head of R&D. He's been CEO, so Darren has seen a lot and shares a lot of, I think, tremendous insights on what makes MedTech great. So let's have this conversation with Darren Uecker, the Chief Technology Officer of Pulse Biosciences. Well, Darren Uecker, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's my pleasure. You had some great news at the AF Symposium last week for Pulse Biosciences. I want to unpack, I think, which was some early, but I think really dramatic results and see where you go next. But first, of course, we love to learn about our guests and about their path in medtech. And as I said before we pushed record, I was going through your path and a lot of familiar names that I want to sort of visit upon. And a lot of successful outcomes to the companies you're with as well. So it seems like you're a bit of a lucky charm. but let's start at the beginning. You were with Computer Motion. Well, actually, my question is always, and let's be consistent, what brought you into the medtech industry?
Yeah, you know, I feel very fortunate to have, you know, met some great people and along the way and got into some really fun and exciting companies. I'm an engineer by background. Mm-hmm. and went to UC Santa Barbara, met some people while I was in graduate school studying robotics. And through those kind of relationships, ended up at Computer Motion in the early days of that company. That's what kind of got me into you know, med tech from the get go. And I'm, you know, 30 plus years now. I'm sort of a lifer in the development of medical devices.
So did you self-identify as a robotics person first joining Computer Motion? Were you not a med tech person?
Yeah, honestly, you know, there was a group of people that were, you know, at UCSB studying robotics. And that company was founded by some of those individuals. But it was really it was a robotics background looking for applications. Mm-hmm. And then the application of surgical robotics was hit on. So it was really, you know, roboticists that had no real understanding of medical devices, had never been into an operating room, and, you know, kind of had to take that technology and learn on the fly everything you need to learn when you develop medical devices. I mean, it's often the case. I think there aren't a lot of programs that sort of teach you the ins and outs of med tech and how to develop devices and, you know, the regulatory environment and all those things. And so it really came from a technology base and then met the application and brought in, you know, physicians as KOLs that helped really connect the technology, you know, to the medical field and to the operating room in this case. And that's, you know, that's a theme, right? That mm-hmm. I think at least is a through line for me. It's technologies that, you know, you meet up with physicians and magic happens.
Absolutely. And of course, a Computer Motion, it was the system used in the first telesurgery procedure that we've talked about on the podcast before.
Broke
some ground and ultimately was acquired by Intuitive. It looks like you were there for the entire time through the acquisition. Is your timeline matching up exactly to that?
Yeah. So I was, pretty early at Computer Motion, and all the way through, you know, basically through the acquisition. So 10-ish years. I mean, it was a, you know, that's a whole, you know, book in itself. But it was a fascinating experience. I mean, it was two companies, I think, that, had the same, you know, goal at the end of the day, but took different approaches to sort of the design and the platforms that were being developed, and really were battling it out in the early days. Trying to figure out, you know, what was going to be the first killer app for robotics and, mm-hmm. And really, you know, paving, you know, pioneering that area. And I think what happened was, you know, there was just we were competing fiercely kind of in the market. We were competing fiercely in the patent areas and in some other places. And I think, you know, the two sort of management teams got together and said, look, we're going to beat each other up here. Yep. And slow each other down and maybe coming together and really focusing on, you know, making this market and building this great opportunity and bringing this technology to patients faster and more efficiently and effectively is really what we should do. And so that really is what, you know, drove that combination. And I was fortunate to be there. I was fortunate to kind of stay through the integration of it. And spent a little time, you know, with Intuitive Surgical. At that time, I have great admiration for, you know, the folks there and what they've done going forward. It was, you know, it was really, I mean, it's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think those early days were foundational in terms of really launching it. And I'm grateful to have played a part in it. So, it was a fantastic experience.
That's great. As you sort of describe the decision to join forces, the way you say it, the tone you use, it makes so much sense. But we don't see that happen very often in industry. There seems to be just a slugfest of sorts until there's a declared winner. Was it just an unusual set of circumstances? What do you think? Why doesn't that happen more often? Or what was so special about that particular moment that it did happen?
Yeah. I mean, you know, probably some of the way I described it is the benefit of, you know, many years between now and then and telling the story. But because, you know, for sure, you know, during a lot of that period of time, you know, the competition was fierce between the companies. Mm-hmm. you know, on the technology side, on the sales and marketing side, you know, in patent litigation, which, you know, is well documented publicly. And so it doesn't come about immediately, of course. I think each company thinks they're the ones that are going to win the day. And so coming to that decision, I think, you know, took a lot of discussion and a lot of, you know, people thinking about what's in the best interest of the future of this technology and belief in this technology and the industry. You know, the CEO of Computer Motion at that time was Bob Duggan, who's, you know, the co-chairman of the board and has been involved in Pulse for a long time. I've known him mm-hmm. for, you know, 30 some odd years now. And it was just a lot of discussion about thinking through the different paths and, you know, kind of at the end of the day, you know, if your goal is really to see this technology impact as many patients as you can, you know, while being able to build a big successful business, are you, you know, better off doing it, you know, independently as you've been doing, or, you know, does joining forces make more sense? And so it didn't happen immediately. It wasn't a quick decision by either company. You know, we had to beat each other up a little bit before maybe figuring out that, you know, again, if we keep beating each other up, someone else could enter this market without all the, you know, the battle scars and, you know, compete against us. And so why not, you know, join forces and really build an impenetrable, you know, moat around this technology with the technology itself, the IP and everything else. And so, I don't know, you know, I think people have different probably ideas about that and how it happened. That's my view. And I was, you know, I was in favor of it at the time. I mean, I could see, you know, how much time and energy we were spending competing. And I could also see how it could just get a lot more efficient and effective if there was one company that was really, you know, going after it and applying all their energy to, you know, building these systems and everything required, you know, to have great outcomes for patients and physicians and everything else. So, when I look back, that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, sure.
Like I said, it was a pleasure to be involved.
That's great. And it clearly worked. So you were standing at a moment in time when you could, I imagine, continue to focus on robotics or surgical robotics and stay within that world or go pure med tech. And you went pure med tech. You were CTO at Computer Motion. You took the job as CTO at Rita Medical Systems, which was one of those companies I referenced earlier that I remember Rita Medical. Were you a med tech person at that point? What was it? Was there any tough decision, crossroads, anything, or did you see a med tech company as your clear next step?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was definitely a difficult decision. You know, I had been in robotics, you know, surgical robotics. I really believed in the promise of it and the future of it. And, you know, I think as I kind of stepped back and thought about, okay, what to do next? Do I stay a part of Intuitive Surgical and see that through? Or do I maybe try, you know, something different? And I got an opportunity at Rita Medical Systems. Joe DeVivo, who had been also at Computer Motion, took over Rita Medical Systems as the CEO. And he recruited me to come to Rita Medical Systems. And, you know, I was just really intrigued by Rita. You know, it was my kind of first step into energy-based systems. It was an RF ablation company, one of the early, you know, volumetric RF ablation companies that was treating malignant disease. So, you know, that company was involved in treating cancer in liver, in kidney, bone metastases, a little bit in lung. And, you know, I was, I was drawn to the idea of, you know, devices as sort of therapeutics and treating cancer and treating, you know, diseases that we know to be big problems. Not that robotics wasn't doing that, But I think, you know, having spent a good amount of time in robotics, maybe, you know, maybe I was also sort of interested in something a little bit different. And, you know, robotics was a little bit different at the time. It probably still is a little bit different in that at the end of the day, it's really a tool and a tool that enhances significantly, you know, surgeons' capabilities. And you know, getting into energy-based systems, it really is more, you know, I viewed it then, I view it now as a little bit more of a therapy type of device. And so I was intrigued by that. I, you know, obviously didn't know a lot about radio frequency ablation. So I, you know, I took the leap. I you know, did my diligence, felt, you know, really excited about it. And it was, you know, it was a great experience. I learned a ton. I think we did a lot of great stuff. And as you probably know, it was ultimately acquired by AngioDynamics. But it was, you know, which was great. I think, again, it was the right transaction for that company and that technology. AngioDynamics was kind of building a, you know, what we might call a oncology device platform, which nobody really talked about that kind of thing back then, but now it's a little bit more common. You know, we have interventional oncologists, and so devices have made their way into oncology, and that was kind of an early step into that. But it was, yeah, that was sort of my thinking, and it was, again, you know, it was a very interesting experience.
That's great. And you held senior technical positions at Conceptus, at CyberHeart. And I want to get into your next move in a moment, but CyberHeart, a Tom Fogarty company. Any Tom Fogarty stories? I know you joined a couple of years after it was started, but what was it like to be part of CyberHeart?
Yeah, I don't have any. I don't have any great stories. I just, you know, like most people that were able to meet Dr. Fogarty and spend some time with him, I'm just super grateful that that I had that opportunity. And you know, we all know he passed recently, and I just, you know, look back on that time. And he was on the board at Pulse. You may not know that for a period of time.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. And so my only story is to say that, I feel very, grateful to have had the opportunity to meet him and to get to work with him. He was brilliant in many ways, and just, you know, being able to talk to him about the things you're working on and other things was a pleasure, and you know, again, I just felt really grateful for that.
That's great. So, and then in June 2009, you became president and CEO of Gynesonics, again, another company I've heard of, another company that would go on to be acquired. Was being a CEO something you were set out to do early on, or something that you had set a goal for yourself at some point, or did it just, it doesn't ever just come together, but how did you find your way into that role?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I worked mostly at smaller med tech companies, you know, and kind of worked my way up into managing more of the organizations from, you know, early on it was, you know, it was R&D, and then it was R&D and operations, and then R&D operations and clin reg quality. And, I think I was approached initially by, a board member, at Gynesonics, to come on to the board at Gynesonics because I had an RF ablation background. Gynesonics, you know, was a company that was developing a very unique a device that combined ultrasound imaging with RF ablation for the treatment of uterine fibroids in women's health. And so a board member approached me to come on the board, and which I was excited to do. And then pretty quickly after that, the board asked me to come on full-time with the company as the president and CEO. And, you know, while I hadn't, you know, to your earlier question, I hadn't really kind of sought that out. But I think, you know, in a small company, you know, the role of the president and CEO is obviously much different than in a much larger company. And so I felt like this was an opportunity to, you know, to use my skills on the product development and technology side by, you know, running the company, but then, you know, build some additional skills you know, around, you know, fundraising and marketing the company and business development activities and things like that. So that's sort of how it came along. And, you know, I was thrilled to at the opportunity. I thought the application was very exciting and, you know, much needed. And the technology was really a good fit for what it was trying to solve.
Mm-hmm. So you worked, as I mentioned a few times, at a few startups as CTO and as a CEO, and you've had a lot of success, or the companies have gone on to be acquired. I joked that you were a lucky charm. You obviously had a greater role than that. But were you able to identify common traits in these success stories? Because they are medtech success stories. What does it take to get a string of wins like that, to lead a company, to be part of a company, to be part of the leadership of a company that would then go on to be part of a larger OEM in a bigger part of healthcare?
I think that small companies are all about, you know, staying focused on the product that you're developing, the data that you need to demonstrate its utility, generate positive outcomes, and in a market that, you know, people are clearly interested in and mm-hmm. And is sizable, and focus on that stuff. You know, I'm not a big fan of a strategy which is, you know, managing to exit. You know, I think that can be very challenging. It's commonly done, and you know, I think some people do it very successfully, and so I think if that's the way people want to go, that works for some people. I think for mm-hmm. me, you know, just focusing on, you know, the product and making a great product with good outcomes, and continuing to drive as if you can, you know, keep taking it forward is the best strategy. And then, you know, you're always in communication with potential acquirers if you're a small med tech company, and, you know, they want to stay kind of in the know with what you're doing. And, you know, then these things just, you know, can kind of happen. I mean, in my case, they were all very different reasons. And, you know, just for clarity, I think at Gynesonics, I wasn't there through the Hologic acquisition. That happened, fair. You know, somewhat recently, and I was, you know, already gone. And that company, it took a long time. But I think the common thread is, you know, you're just driving the product development, you're generating great outcomes, you're, you know, demonstrating that physicians can use your device, that it's easy to learn, easy to use, in a market that, you know, people understand is going to be a good business. And, you know, then the acquisitions, if that's the exit, they come. And, so anyway, I think that's the strategy I've tried to hold to. And we've done that at Pulse as well. I think it's a common thread.
Well, that's great. Well, let's get into the Pulse story. I think that's a good, simple strategy, though. Good products drive good outcomes. You joined as president and CEO in 2015. Talk to us a bit about Pulse and its mission. What problem is it trying to solve?
So I was recruited to come to Pulse. It was a very unique story. The company had been kind of pulled together by an investment group or a small kind of investment banking firm called MDB Capital. They identified the technology, did some research into the technology and its IP, identified a couple of universities and a couple of small companies that had IP in what we call now nanosecond pulse field ablation.
Oh, interesting.
And realized that this could be a really unique platform technology that could potentially be used in a lot of applications. And so they secured all of that intellectual property under one company, which is now Pulse Biosciences, and in exchange for equity. And then went about hiring a CEO, which was me, to really, you know, take this technology, which was, you know, kind of on the bench, if you will, had come out of universities. And so the mission was, let's, you know, take this, you know, really unique non-thermal technology that has a really unique mechanism of action in terms of its ablation, and, you know, build a platform and explore what are the best applications to go after. And, mm-hmm. you know, I had been in ablation throughout my years at, you know, like we just talked about, at different places. And so as I understood the technology, I just believed that, wow, you know, this is a new energy modality. It's going to have a lot of applications throughout the body. And so, you know, if we build a kind of a general purpose platform with this technology, and then begin to explore the different applications, I think we're going to hit on a number of them. So unlike, you know, a lot of med tech companies that start with a sort of singular application, very focused, single indication, and maybe even, as we discussed previously, maybe even with an eye towards strategics that, you know, would be interested in acquiring it and putting it in their channel. You know, this was much more of a platform kind of opportunity, or potential platform opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the field was kind of open in terms of where should we go and what should we do. So that was really the attraction for me. And our vision and mission was really to take this, you know, nanosecond PFA technology and move it into as many applications as we could for the benefit of patients and physicians and, you know, the healthcare system as a whole.
But the focus was on the heart, or was there opportunities everywhere?
Yeah, so there were really opportunities everywhere, and we've explored a number of them, you know, even through preclinical work and clinical work. We explored dermatology for a period of time. Hmm. We started in on the cardiac ablation side, you know, relatively early, probably a couple years, you know, once we were kind of had our pulse generator platform, which we now call NPulse. Once we had that, you know, we then worked with some researchers externally and began our own internal programs to look at cardiac ablation, both on the surgical side, and then ultimately, you know, on the electrophysiology side. So it was sort of always one of the top applications. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, you know, we have, I just mentioned two in the cardiac space, which we currently have ongoing. And then we have another one that's currently in early commercialization, which is a percutaneous ablation device using our nanosecond PFA technology for the treatment of benign thyroid nodules. So it's a, you know, a very different than treating the heart, but it's a equally compelling application for this technology.
That's interesting. I mean, the story isn't identical, but as you're talking about it, it kind of sounded like your computer motion experience too, where you were looking for an application for robotics. And this was clearly more focused than that, but how unusual is this approach? This is, and I don't mean this in any sort of diminutive way, but this is, you had a really great hammer and you were kind of looking for the right nail. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're spot on. And I often, you know, talk to people about the parallels between, you know, robotics and this technology. It's very, very similar. And you know, obviously I lived through the robotics days. I learned a lot in that process, which I think I've, you know, brought to Pulse Biosciences in terms of, you know, how do you bring about a platform, and then get into, you know, different applications. And one way you start with that is to build the platform so that it has a lot of capability. And so from the very beginning, you know, we built a console, which I mentioned, called NPulse, that, you know, is a, if you look at our website, you can see it. It's a very polished, it's, you know, a commercial grade system now. But it has all kinds of capability, knobs you can turn, and it's all software driven. It has, you know, wireless uploading to, you know, proprietary cloud infrastructure that we have. So we really started from the beginning and built something that we knew had the capability to allow us to go after a lot of different applications. So that's sort of point one, right? When you're getting into, hey, I think this can be a platform technology. So, you know, how do we prioritize our activities from the get-go? The second thing I would say in that, which, you know, I touched on, but I also mentioned, or I also learned from my robotics days, is you have to really be diligent in the development of your intellectual property along the way. Because often, and I think this was true in robotics also, you know, the early IP is all about the core technology and what it is and those types of things. But as you develop these systems and you actually, you know, have to move them into the clinic or an operating room, you learn a lot of things along the way that have never been solved because nobody's brought that technology into the operating room before. And, you know, we have unique requirements in the operating room around safety and things like that. And so it's very important in those early days to, you know, really make sure you're focused on those things and the IP that you can gain, you know, patents specifically around those different developments, you know, that you're doing. So, you know, I would say the first, you know, third of our history, maybe even the first half, was really focused, you know, kind of on those things in particular. And the last thing I would say quickly about, you know, being able to do those things as a platform company is you need you need board members that have that vision and aren't focused on narrow indications so that you can exit as quickly as possible. And with the good fortune of having Bob Duggan involved with the company, you know, from the relatively early days, and he is, you know, by all, you know, all definitions, a visionary, someone who's really wants to, you know, change medicine and change the way things are done in a positive way, and you know, is willing to invest in those things. So, you know, those are, you know, those are the important elements when you're starting out, especially with a platform. I think, you know, robotics was very similar, and we're kind of doing those same things here.
And how did you do all of this as a public company? You went public in 2016. I mean, this is just a contrarian approach to medtech development, I have to say.
So the folks that you know, kind of founded and launched the company, or brought all the IP together to bring the company together, you know, their model was to go early in terms of the company being public, and you know, it was a little bit of a biotech like strategy, and they, you know, they were successful in terms of taking us public, and we raised money. That allowed us to really get going. And then, you know, subsequently Bob Duggan got involved, and he's, you know, he's really put in a lot of his own money into the company. And that's, you know, that's been key to us being able to do what I said. You know, I think that you have to have backing that can see, you know, the vision and can invest for the long term. And, you know, as a public company, of course, it can be challenging. But you know, as a public company, then you're obligated to be reporting on a quarterly basis, and there's a discipline to that that I think is also valuable for companies, even small companies. So, you know, it was the path that we were put on, and that we accepted, and we've made, I think, the best of it, and I think it's you know, we find ourselves in a good spot right now as a result of it.
That's great. Well, I want to unpack a little more about the field, the pulse field ablation field, but let's just hit upon quickly the news that you had last week, released at AF Symposium. I know it was a smaller trial, but I think you had like a 96% success rate with your treatments. Can you talk a bit about your recent news and where you are in the clinical development of your PFA system?
Sure. Yeah, so it was very exciting for us. So our electrophysiology program today consists of a very unique catheter that, you know, works with our Impulse nanosecond PFA system. It's a very uniquely designed catheter designed specifically, you know, for our nanosecond pulse field technology. What's unique about it is it's what we would call a circumferential. It creates a circumferential ablation, so a complete, you know, 360 degree around ablation. So if you take our catheter, you can place it inside the pulmonary vein, and in a single 5-second ablation cycle, you completely ablate around the entire circumference of the pulmonary vein. You can also use it on the posterior wall. And so, you know, for the electrophysiologists, it's a very simple catheter to use. It requires very few applications to perform pulmonary vein isolation, which is the, you know, the dominant procedure for treating paroxysmal atrial fibrillation patients. And, you know, last week at the AF Symposium, what we presented was, over the last couple of years, we've been running a feasibility study in Europe at three different centers. This is our kind of first in human study. And we've been in Prague, predominantly at Homolka Hospital, with Dr. Vivek Reddy, and he presented the data, you know, from the podium at the meeting. And, you know, it was a total of 150 patients were presented. It's feasibility data. So during this study, we used two different doses. We started with a dose that has been very effective, and then we used a lower dose to test that dose as part of the feasibility. Ultimately going with the dose that we started with. So where we started, we ended. And we've also used quite a lot of different mapping and navigation systems through the course of this feasibility study. So we really spent a lot of time doing these this study to look at different technologies to combine with our catheter, having different operators with their hands on the catheter, making sure the dose is right. And we presented all that data, or I should say Dr. Reddy presented all that data at the AF Symposium. We're very excited about the data. While it's feasibility and we need to reproduce this data, and we intend to reproduce this data in an IDE study coming up very soon, you know, as you mentioned, using Holter monitors for procedural success, we had a 96% success rate at 1 year in 47 patients, and 100% success at 6 months with 75 patients, again, with Holter monitoring as the endpoint. So we're thrilled about it. You know, the safety profile is excellent. And so, you know, we've been really, you know, gearing up and working hard on this study as a means to get to our IDE pivotal study. And again, as I mentioned, that study has now been approved by the FDA. It was approved in last December of 2025. And we expect to begin enrollment on that study here very soon.
That's great. And just to update folks, you're now Chief Technology Officer. I know Paul Laviolette of SV Life Sciences, or formerly of SV Life Sciences, is CEO. Let's look broadly about broadly at the industry and kind of wrap up with this. As you were talking, I kind of was thinking back to getting to computer motion, except with the decision, however it came to be, to merge with Intuitive, the understanding that we're going to, instead of slugging it out with each other, let's combine forces. We're looking at a PFA market now with every major strategic, I think, has a program. We're seeing a number of startups in the area that have their own systems, or in some form, in some stage of clinical testing. We've got the founder of Farapulse, who's now working at Field Medical, who did a move to the ventricular part of the heart. So this seems like an area where people are going to choose to slug it out. How do you see this sort of moving forward? How does Pulse Biosciences fit into this broader field?
Yeah. So we, I think the way we view this is, you know, we really view ourselves as kind of a second generation PFA technology. It's a very, nanosecond is very different from everything I think that's out there today, which is generally in the microsecond domain. We think there are significant advantages to nanosecond, including, you know, depth of ablation, homogeneity of the ablation, ability to create large ablations quickly. So we think there are, you know, significant advantages. One thing we have been public about is that we also understand that in order to create a great solution for the electrophysiologist and get great outcomes, it requires the integration of, you know, different products, different technologies. And so on the ablation side, integrating tightly with a mapping and navigation system, you know, such as the Insight X system from Abbott or the Cardo system from J&J, can provide the kind of solution that electrophysiologists expect and will help drive great outcomes. And so, you know, we've been public in saying that we believe that this business, this electrophysiology business of ours, is one where a partnership makes the most sense. Not just because it can provide, you know, the best possible solution, we think, but also because, you know, there are some very large companies in this space that have very large footprints and large installed base. And I think strategically, we think that just makes the most sense. So, you know, we don't know right now as I'm talking to you, you know, what that looks like for us. But, you know, at the AF Symposium, we did a live case broadcast. We showed our catheter with a novel integration from Abbott with the Insight system. You know, it was very well received. I think it was fantastic. At the HRS meeting last year, we had an integration with the Cardo system. And so, you know, we think there's a lot of opportunity out there to partner. Our goal is to partner because we think that provides the best solution. And so, you know, I think that's what I would say about, you know, where we're at. And, and you know, you pointed to, you know, previous and in the robotics conversation, it's similar. I think we recognize what we're really good at, what our technology is really good at, but where it makes sense to partner to leverage what other people are good at and, you know, and drive a really great solution.
Well, that seems like a great sort of sensible possible outcome to how things may shape up in electrophysiology. What about your other two programs? How do you see those playing out in being part of Pulse Biosciences Futures?
So we have a cardiac clamp. So we have a cardiac surgery program where the clamp uses our nanosecond PFA technology. It's very exciting. This is in an IDE study today. And, you know, I think where that heads remains to be seen. You know, we're fully prepared to take it through the IDE study and to PMA approval. And then, you know, continue to move forward and we'll see. I think it depends, but, you know, certainly there are companies that have large cardiac surgery device businesses where they have, you know, reps and others standing in cases where these types of ablations are done. So I think, you know, I think there are opportunities for partnership. There are also opportunities to continue to move it forward, you know, as part of Pulse Biosciences. And on the thyroid side, I think, you know, we've made the decision to commercialize. We're currently in the very early stages of that. But, you know, we think with, you know, a relatively small footprint, you know, we can really, you know, drive this commercially and, you know, and just continue to build this market. It's an untapped market. It's one we're very excited about, and I think makes sense, you know, to have our own folks in there and moving this forward for the time being. And so, yeah, I think they're all kind of different in their own way.
That's fantastic. Well, Darren, I appreciate the walk down memory lane. You've been again a lot of med tech success stories, and it sounds like you're working on another one. So appreciate your sharing your insights and experiences.
Yeah, Tom, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Please do subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network or the Device Talks Weekly Podcast directly. But if you do the podcast network, you'll get access to all of our podcasts, including upcoming episodes of Women in MedTech, hosted by Kayleen Brown, and Avatox, hosted by both Kayleen Brown and myself. So lots of great MedTech podcasts coming your way. I hope you will, of course, join us at Device Talks Boston. That's happening May 27th and 28th at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. Go to devicetalks.com to find more information, or you can go directly to boston.devicetalks.com. You can also meet up with us at Device Talks Minnesota. As we mentioned, that's happening on May 4th. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register to join us there. It's a great event last year. We're happy to relaunch it and can't wait to be back on Star Wars Day, May 4th. Other than that, please connect with me on LinkedIn. Please connect with Kayleen Brown. Please connect with Chris Newmarker. And of course, make sure you follow Device Talks and Mass Device on LinkedIn. That's it, folks. Thanks again for being part of Device Talks and, of course, for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.